This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2021, held at Faith Builders from August 2 through 6.
Thank you for coming to an administrator's session. That'll be a little bit more than just administration, but we'll take a whack at a few things here. And hopefully, really what I want to do is stimulate some questions and discussion for this afternoon. Now, according to my notes, 14 signed up for this morning and 5 for this afternoon. And that's just really fine with me. I really, really enjoy just sitting with a couple of people and bouncing ideas around, because that's really the intention. When the committee asked me to do this, I said, well, you get a couple of administrators together, and I can promise you there's no shortage of topical questions. What I'd really like for you to do, whether you attend this afternoon or not, but particularly if you're attending this afternoon, is to just go ahead and jot down questions. Maybe not questions so much as observations and maybe topics of discussion that you would like to see the group talk about this afternoon. So this morning's session, maybe I see it as trying to raise the categories more than me telling you, here's what you need to do. I'm old enough to know that if we were to go around here and have each of you describe your school structure and your community structure, there's probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 at least categories of situations here in the room. So I couldn't possibly design something that would actually sort of, I don't know, bump into all the questions and that are related there. So I've tried to stay more general here, talk about the issues that I know are pertinent to the question of administrative strategies that build community. And you're not looking at an answer man at all. I'm far better at raising questions than I am at giving answers. But as Francis Schaeffer used to say, the problem with society is that it's not that they don't know the answers. The real difficulty is that they don't know the questions. And that really is a significant point. You have to be in the saddle for a little while before the questions begin to frame themselves. Welcome, Jeremy. Grab yourself a handout there and find a seat and join the conversation here. So, see, you sat in this room a fair amount before, not?
Some.
You know something about it. Arlen, when you went here, were we using this room regularly then or not?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been here too long. I can't remember what happened when. But good to have students back here with us too. Let's do pray before we go on. Father, pause here a moment and just lift our hearts and minds and souls to you. Lord, I know that represented in this room are many victories, many questions, maybe even some sorrows about leadership, responsibility, administration in schools, churches, and beyond. Lord, we come this morning just asking you one more time to open our hearts and our minds to your Spirit's direction. I ask that for myself. I ask that for each one here in the room. And I just pray that you would help us to a deeper understanding of your expectation for us here on the face of the earth in 2021 as we bend our efforts toward your service and toward the building of the kingdom of God. We commit this time to you in Christ. Amen. All right, so you have a handout there. Part of that handout that some of you probably have seen before, in that it is I pull it from some other pieces that I have done over the years. But the first part here, I would like to at least raise some of the issues that we need to think about and then kind of bounce off of that. Jeremy, I don't know if you're going to be here this afternoon, but I encouraged him to write down questions, thoughts, whatever. And even if you're not, I'd like to see your set of questions that you would have or your set of insights as we talk here along the way. I don't need a big introduction here. This is my wife, Sheila, and me. So we live here just up the road, about 2 miles. And I administrated schools. I was an administrator back in Chambersburg, which is where I grew up, at Anchor Christian School. And my wife grew up in Shippensburg. Her name is Sheila. She was a Martin. So, yeah, 16 years there, then moved to Faith Builders, or moved into this area, administrated here for a number of years. Probably, though, have had more administrative experience pastorally. I don't know if I have or not. But kind of been a spread there of work. Does that qualify me to be up here talking? Answer is no. As I said, it's given me more questions than it has answers, but I could share with you a couple of the things that I've learned along the way that might be helpful here to you. I still count myself a learner for sure in these areas. So we'll jump right in here with the slideshow and talk a little bit. I'll do some talking here, and then, as I said, we'll see once how the morning goes. Be free just to raise your hand, jump right in. If there's a question that comes immediately to mind, this can be far more of a conversation than just me giving you, dispensing some information here. So, administrative strategies that build community. I'm fascinated that young people today talk. I hear a yearning for community that I hadn't heard for a little while. The spread of ages for my children. Jolynn is our oldest. We have 7 children, and she is 45. I think she is. She's 45, and Jordan is our youngest, and Jordan is 25, I think, 25 or 26, right into there somewhere. The lower end of the last 3 of our children are sons. So Kyle, who is a teacher here, and maybe some of you have seen him around here, Kyle and Joy. And then Erickson was in Iowa for a married Arlen sister. Taught there for a little while, but he's back here in this area. And then Jordan. And the reason I'm mentioning these 3 is because they did not experience the old cultural community that Chambersburg brought to us. Okay, so that's an old Mennonite community there. Oh, that's right, Ernest, you have some roots back that way too. In fact, he went to the same church that my wife grew up in. So, your family did.
My dad did.
Yeah, your dad did. Old community, my first 4 children experienced that and have memories there. The last 3, Kyle has a bit of a memory there. I think he was a 5-year-old when they moved, if I remember right. But it's just not strong. He then went back and taught school at Anchor Christian School, where I taught years ago, when he was not in his early 20s. He taught there for 3 years. It's life-changing for him. I remember the day he came home one weekend he came home and sat down at the table. And he said, "Well, Daddy, I'm starting to get it." I said, "Well, you're starting to get what?" he said, "Well, I'm starting to get what you're talking about. When you talk about the strong roots that a traditional community creates somehow or another, that is a positive thing." And I'll be really honest with you. I know about the negativity about tradition and old communities and all of that, but But anybody who knows me knows that I've kind of said, now wait here, before you get too thrashing around too much, think twice about what you're saying what you're feeling and experiencing is all this negative stuff that you seems to weigh heavily on you. I don't think you have any clue. The strong, positive, powerful things that were handed to you that you're just not aware of. So Kyle was saying, okay, I'm beginning to get it. I always wondered what you were talking about. Why? Well, we moved into community. It's our churches were startup churches, and Josh's church down the street here was here for a while, but they were just kind of getting on their feet too. Everything was just sort of kind of new, and there weren't any of this real established, strong things. This is what we do. I understand, before you say anything about it, there's a weakness in that too. But there are some powerful strengths there. Okay, so I'm saying that to say I don't know that any of us really know what it costs to build community. I hear young people yearning for it. Something wistful, something, how can, what's happened to our communities? Why have they kind of just sort of disintegrated? And what do we need to do to kind of pull them back together? I myself will admit to you very quickly, I'm not sure what the price is. So I'm not quite sure. I have a strong suspicion it's a higher price than what we think. I don't mean the cost is so. I don't mean like it's painfully costly. I just mean it's hard work. and it's generational work. Okay, that goes into this, and it's built these communities that even though we have some negative feelings about Lancaster County off and on, before you just write them off. If you were suddenly to erase Lancaster County, just in your mind, somehow you had the power just to whoop, wipe it off the map. What would happen? I think we would experience a greater loss than what we think. Okay, and I don't mean just financially. I know that that's I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't want to push back against the negativity that we feel automatically when we talk about these kinds of things. So coming back to the question then, administrative strategies that build community. This goes deeper with me than just talking about, oh, well, let's fix this and let's do this and why don't you do this and why don't you do that? it's way deeper than that. I hope I'm talking to a group of people who can somehow feel the depth of this, of what I'm trying to get at here with this subject. Okay? Notice that I'm jumping in at administration. Not at the teacher who is the glamorous person in front of the classroom who really can make it happen, we need those people too. But what I've discovered, go read the histories of EMC, let's say, EMU today. I read that the first time, it's kind of like, hold it. You know what it's about? A large part of that book is about board meetings and board decisions, and this, they decided to do this, and this debate over here, and this debate over here, and how they came to decide to build a building here, and how they, and the thing is what really controlled the history of EMU was what happened in the board sessions. that's what really created the outcomes, the decisions. So it's the way, do we hire this person or this person? Do we do this? That was in the board meetings. That's administration. Okay. And so while I have a natural, resistance to administration, I did happen to quit administrating here and go to teaching full time because I don't feel, even though I have that bit of resistance to administration, just hear me, I am not stupid. It's very, very, very important how things are done. Now, I'm also aware here that I'm probably talking to a number of you from very small schools, some of you from larger schools, and governesses all over the map there as to how it's actually done. So I'm not even going to try to address that. Just going to give you a couple of ideas and maybe you can go back, talk to your board about or whatever. and share with them. So point number one here, very simple one, create space where community can happen. Josh, let me let you in on a little, just a little bit of my own heart's wranglings here. Now, I might point it to him. He goes to the church that I'm a pastor at, Meadville Mennonite Chapel. We're full and overflowing. And so what are we gonna do? Are we gonna divide and start another congregation? Or are we going to build bigger? Just exactly what are we gonna do? Well, I know just not 15 years ago, the spirit of the age said, for crying out loud, don't build bigger. Don't do that. Don't even think about it. Just start another church. Listen to it. Communities need space for community. The one reason, the one thing that would bend me toward building is I do know that if you don't have the spaces for community to happen, where people can actually come together, the adequate spaces. Think about it. Could Teachers Week happen without a building like this? I'm actually just talking about buildings and things like that. You do have to have those spaces. If you don't create those spaces, it is harder to make community happen. It's the one argument that I would use to say, well, I'll surprise you all. I'm against these volleyball tournaments. I'm against all that stuff. I'm not exactly against a little bit of a gymnasium, a little bit of a recreation building. Why? It does create the space for young people to come together. You didn't hear that argument. Don't tell anybody I said that. But my point is, you do need space to make things happen. That costs money. Now, circling back to schools, it so happens to be that across the country, since 1970, we've built schools and we've put them in basements. We've put them all over the place, you know, to try to get them to work. The first year I taught, there were 100, and I was teaching with John D. Martin, and there were probably, 100 students or so in a very, very small area for that many students. And faith builders, people would go crazy with what we tried to do with just a small space. So don't hear me arguing for, I don't know, everything being just right. In fact, I kind of have, I'm not sure if that's really a good goal, but the space you do need. And schools can provide that. So if you're an administrator, it's something to think about how the school can become space for community to flourish. Okay? And I really am talking physical space. It costs money. I mean, Josh knows a little bit about it. I can't believe how I flip-flopped all over the map here at MMC trying to figure out, what do I really support here? should we be building? Should we be starting another congregation? Should we be doing what? But this is one question to me that's an important question. Right now, that's an immediate question for Meadville Mennonite because we hardly have the space to get the people in that are attending there and membership and all of that. But apply it in your situation and think about it. And I would want you to think proactively here. You want to ask yourself the question, how can we as a school use the space we have to actually contribute to community? And I'm thinking beyond just school. I'm thinking in other ways that can happen. I should mention here, this school is big enough that like my son Kyle has a Thursday evening basketball group that they invite the community boys in, and I don't know, some evenings there are 30, 40, 50 community boys come in here to play basketball. We have the space for that little ministry to happen, and Gerald is kind enough to, since the school oversees that, to allow that to happen on Thursday evenings. And the students here at Faith Builders are willing to set aside volleyball for one night, mind you, so that they can actually have this little piece of community life. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, where you have space, you create it. Second, prioritize time where community can grow. You would think that with all the tools that we have at our fingertips, we surely would have time to burn. Nuts. It's craziness. I said to my wife before, I said, you know what? Our great-grandmothers, when they washed clothes, they heated their hot water on a cook stove. They put it into a tub of some kind. They hand washed them sometimes. Other times they had some kind of a little wringer washer that worked or something like that. I remember, I'm old enough to remember of, you know, putting the diapers up through those old wringer washers and getting your hand up in it now and then. Anybody, that ever happened to anybody? A couple of you. I grew up in a family of 13 children. And I look back and I said, my wife, I said, I don't get it. I don't, what, how in the world? You just plop them in this machine, push go, and it does its thing, and you go do whatever else, and after a while you come back and pull it out, and you put another load in, and push go, and you go do something else. Why are we so busy? Well, then I did figure that one out, because we took a bath once a week. Yeah, and everybody smelled a certain way, and we didn't care about it. So they just didn't wash as often. Anyway, somehow, it with all of the stuff we're doing, is the time actually created? Created is, I was going to wanted to use create, but you can't create time, you know that. You prioritize it. You only have 24 in a day. And somehow you have to prioritize that. You say, what's that have to do with me as an administrator? Well, I hate meetings. I particularly hate meetings that have no purpose and go nowhere. If you're an administrator, make a meeting count. That just mean that kindly. I don't mean that critically. I just mean there's too much time wasted with spinning wheels, sometimes as administrators. There's the opposite. There's the opposite where no time is carved out to actually sit down and get our act together so that we know what to do the next day. And so what we know what the plan is for the school year and to map it out. So don't misunderstand me. But you as an administrator, I don't know if I'm talking to administrators back here or not, but so just bear with me when I keep saying you as an administrator, if you are, if you're not, well, whatever. It is your responsibility to actually, within the school parameters, to create the time and space for your faculty to grow together. It is also your responsibility to think about that connection with community. And how do you build those connections? Don't raise your hands on this, because I kind of know the answer ahead of time. So you plan a school patron meeting, and you put a lot of time and energy into it, and you even get a speaker in from somewhere around 30% of the patrons actually show up for the meeting. That's frustrating. And maybe that's not your case. Thank the Lord, I know some schools that actually make it. That is a rule. If you are a patron of this school, you are at the meetings. It's not a bad plan, actually. But plan those, actually think through those and create time and space for that to happen. It can be as simple as this. So when I administrated at Anchor School, the whole patron body knew that I was at school until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that I specifically invited on, I believe it was Tuesdays and Thursdays, I can't remember just exactly. I said on those 2 days, the time between, I can't remember if I said three, you know, it was after those 2 days, it was 3:30 to 5. If you have a specific something that you would like to talk about, there's space, that's time. I've actually, and I have it in writing, given it to them, but they know that's when they can call, come by. And I've saved that space for specifically for that purpose. Those are the kinds of things. Again, you adapt them to your school and use them appropriately. Set aside resources for community events. And that's what you're looking at there are the three biggies: space, time, and resources. Okay, and so if you're an administrator, you oversee those in some fashion. Learn how to use them wisely. And think community. How can I build community here? Fourth, identify and prioritize community events where you will intentionally invest. You can't do everything. Absolutely can't. So for my wife and I, now I'll give you an example here. I'm going to let some of the Faith Builders personnel know in on some of our ways of organizing things here. But so there are a lot of weddings associated with Faith Builders. And they're from coast to coast. And we get invited to most of them. We can't go to all of them. So you just randomly choose, flip a coin or what? Well, my wife's a mentor here for the ladies. She doesn't teach here, of course, but she mentors some of the ladies and I mentor some of the men. So we have a prioritization thing. So if it's within 250 miles, and if it's one of our mentorees, we won't go to every one of those, but we'll try to. They'll get our first attention. And this doesn't matter who they are. That's the first general approach that we take. It doesn't answer all the questions, and sometimes we deviate from that, but it gives us an idea how to think about it, okay, as we begin to approach the question. Because we know if we're exceeding 250 miles, we know immediately that's not just a day trip. Okay, so now you're 2 days. I don't need to go into all that. You get the point there. But we found it very, very important to think about that. I was going to give you a paper, and maybe I'll get it ready for this afternoon. We also have my wife and I use this, and I share it with some of the students here at school, a set of concentric circles that move outward. Okay, at the very center is church, community, and family. And then we actually name some of our next connections in the next circle, say the Anabaptist community, and we keep moving out, and that helps us to think about how we actually are going to prioritize our time and energy, and where we're going to fit things into, where we're going to say no, and where we're going to say yes, and so forth and so on. And apply this to school, where you want to invest. Investment is a big issue for me. It's like, well, you can't just fling your time around everywhere. So where are you going to invest it? Okay, and as an administrator of a school, you're thinking about yourself. You're also thinking about your school and your staff and community. Where's the strategic places to make the investments? Okay, and again, I couldn't answer them for you, but I wouldn't mind this afternoon just bringing some of that up and get some ideas from you. Communicate on a regular basis with local leadership and be quick to defer to their interest. I think one of the worst strategies for an administrator of any organization, but particularly of a school in the community, is to somehow get into an adversarial relationship with the leadership, the local leadership. It has to be one of the biggest mistakes you could possibly make, I think. However, one of my issues was, at least in my early years of administration, was just neutrality. So I wasn't in an adversarial relationship, I don't think, by any means that I knew of. But neither was I in a strongly proactive relationship with the local leadership. Oh, I talked to people after church and a whole lot of things like that. It's not like I was lazy. I don't think I was totally removed from it. But I've discovered that it takes some it's a really good idea to be proactive there on this point. What do I mean? Well, take the local bishop out for breakfast. Pays bill. And then don't tell him anything. Listen. Ask a question or so and then just listen. Now, of course, take what I'm saying here with a grain of salt. You might have a few things that you wanted to share to say, you know, I have a concern about, I'm noticing such and such in the school and I'm wondering what you're thinking, and so on. Take social media. I will guarantee you that in most schools that I know of, particularly if they're larger schools, the teachers and administrators get a little bit frustrated with just exactly how to deal with the proliferation of phones, and do they come to school, and if they do, where do they go, and on and on and on and on and on. Well, you know, before taking direct action, you probably get to sit down and talk with a local leadership and ask them, okay, we're feeling this problem at school, and just wondering what you all are thinking about it. Are you, what would you like me to do? How can I be helpful? And this takes time and energy. Here's another meeting. As I said, I don't like meetings, but the ones that are well invested and yield a lot, make sure that you create the time and the space and use some resources needed to make them happen. So I'm on both sides of the equation. I'm the leader here in the churches, and also a teacher, and was an administrator, and have felt, you know, the push and pull on either side. Things happen at school, and you're like, what? Things happen at church, and the school said, what? What are they thinking? Well, the way to deal with that is sit down, talk with people. So, and I'm saying defer to local leadership. Schools are influential, and there's a place where we need we should embrace that opportunity to influence. I don't have any problem with that at all. I want my teachers to exercise their influence. There's a place to remember that there's parameters to that. And particularly as an administrator, it feels to me as though that close working with local leadership is just absolutely important. Pause button here. Comments here on any of these? Or insights or stories or what are you thinking? Jeremy? True, not true, crazy?
You mentioned in the beginning the desire for community, especially among the young crowd. So that is a broader cultural influence. And I didn't realize it until I went to, you know, liberal arts university. Mm-hmm. And it is huge among the student body.
You have a sense of why that is?
So they all want it, but not a single one of them are lining up to become Amish. They admire the Amish, but not, so it's this disconnect.
Uh-huh.
But the desire for it is because of what they feel has been missing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how exactly they came to that conclusion, like why did they feel it more? Why did we feel it more than maybe 30 years ago? Maybe there has been significant disintegration. Maybe it's postmodernism, but it certainly is. It's in the water.
Oh man, you're not kidding.
At the local college.
Wow. Huh. Yeah, I've noticed it for sure in the broader community. I'm almost sure that it's related, first of all, to we're made for community. So there's probably an internal monitor, I think, that senses when it's not there. And then if you look out there and you see it, at least it looks like it, the Amish community or whatever, and you say, wow, well, maybe it can be done. But it circles back to my point, and that is, I don't know that we know what it takes to actually create that kind of community. What'd you say? None of them are lining up to join the Amish.
You know, there were girls that would brag about dates they had with the local Amish boys. And in fact, I had a couple of them that told me that they would like to marry an Amish, but they wouldn't necessarily want to be Amish. But why do you want to marry an Amish?
There you go.
Because he will never leave me.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Did you say family was at the center of your concentric circle?
We always go back and forth deciding whether it's family or community. We hope we are so rooted in community, it makes no difference.
I was just thinking, as he was talking, I mean, I'm seeing the breakdown of family within the last year. Three people, I'm a member of the local fire department, and two of them are chiefs, so I mean, it's affecting the whole fire department. Three of them have divorced within the last year. You know, my wife's leaving. So I'm just thinking about the breakdown of family in society and how that, you know, I mean, that's very central in the Amish community as well, someone that won't leave you.
Yeah.
And I think lack of face-to-face communication works toward breaking down community. I mean, I know we have modern communication, we communicate all of the time, but I still think it's a breakdown.
My wife and I were just talking about this, and she was, did you forgive us? Some of us are old enough here, we talk like we know what we're talking. But so I want to know how many communities actually did this. In the community I grew up, I'll give Sheila a story. So it's Sunday afternoon, we just got done eating lunch. Dad lies down on the sofa, and he says he's taking a nap. And come on, Dad, let's go see the fries. I want to rest. No, come on. And my wife said, you know, Dad would get off the sofa, and we'd get in the car, and we would drive. You didn't call and ask, can we come? You just drove down the road, and you drove in the lane. We're here to visit. And if they weren't home, you went to the next farm. And if they weren't home, you just kept going until somebody was home. Today, that would be so rude. That happened in your community, Daniel?
Yeah. Happens in our home. I mean, how do we operate?
Yeah. Well, there you go. And see, that was face-to-face. So it's Sunday afternoon. I mean, I'll admit to you, so I am so tired Sunday afternoons anymore. It's like, man, can I just have a two-hour nap? But get up off that sofa and get in that car and go for that face-to-face discussion.
In the Dominican Republic or in Central America where my wife worked, that was the way they operate. They still operate that way.
Do they?
You don't call ahead. You just go visit.
Just go visit.
That's,
there you go.
That's the culture.
Oh, boy. Who else?
One of the things we deal with in Los Angeles, gang culture.
Oh, yeah.
Homelessness and things like that.
Sure.
Addictions. And it occurs to me as you're talking that the opposite of addiction is connection.
There you go.
And the only way to connect is in community.
It's in community. Well said. And there you hear is perspective. So that's way out on the other end. You're homeless, addicted, people who know almost nothing about community. The addiction community.
Well,
I have to think about that.
They have that lab rat study that's come out not so long ago where they put the heroin in the water. And if the rats had, like, lots of rats to be with, they'd take a couple sips and go back to the other rats. If they were by themselves, they'd be dead within 5 days from the addiction.
What?
And then they tried it, they progressed it, and got fully addicted rats and put them in that setting where they had 12 other rats to be with. They took a little bit of the water with heroin and went back to the rats, and they recovered.
Well, imagine that. They're smarter than human beings. Okay, who else? If you have a link on that, I wouldn't mind seeing that study if you can find it.
I probably read it in Wendell Berry.
Okay, Wendell Berry, okay.
Sure.
Well, good. Anybody else?
As a person from the South, we still hold that open, like Sunday afternoons, we just show up uninvited.
Praise the Lord. What part of the South are you from, brother?
I'm from Alabama.
Alabama. There you go. Might have to move there to experience that again. I love it. Who else?
I want to say thank you. I'm coming in, I'm from a somewhat traditional background, and we still have the community, and it's sometimes hard to value because it's like, what's too much? But it's good for me to see this part of the picture too, so I value it more.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome for sure.
I can talk because I'm not officially supposed to be in here, but you know, just one thing that I'm interested in why young people are attracted to it but don't commit themselves. I'm speaking as a millennial, still relatively young, although I'm getting older by the minute. So like what is behind that disconnect? But I remember feeling that very strongly living in Jerusalem and seeing the Orthodox Jewish communities, and I think there was something about being known, like and having a place. And again, there's lots of negative things that happen within those communities, lots of abuse, lots of everything that goes with insular communities, but because like particularly in the West, our focus is on liberation and disconnection, like everything is toward autonomy. And lack of definition. I mean, this characterizes the gender conversation across the board, whatever. Like it's about lack of definition. But then there's something very attractive about being in a community where somebody knows you. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you play the Mennonite game, right? We joke about
Right.
But it's like it's being known. I think is what's mm-hmm. the point, what's desired there. But I'm still wondering what is that? Like, mm-hmm. What is that mm-hmm. disconnect between the desire and the inability to join? Is it a problem with the individual? Is it a problem with the community? Is it what's going on there?
That opens quite a box. Comments, sir, on that one, Arlen?
What I would observe is vulnerability.
Uh-huh.
That's the line that they won't cross. And that actually goes back to the cross of Jesus Christ.
I think if we can be allowed to self-evaluate it all, like, why don't people join the Amish? In part, if we're willing to self-evaluate, because there are problems in that community.
Yes.
And there's not everything wrong with the Facebook community.
Mm-hmm.
That's community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, completely different level, but there are problems with that community.
Right.
And if we can tweak our communities,
mm-hmm.
our churches, whatever, we can add some appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Back to what he was saying about being vulnerable. I totally agree with you there. I feel like we are not vulnerable enough with each other. And it creates this, it's all surface level. It goes no farther than surface level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where a lot of this does come in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for saying so. In the other session that I have given here, that I gave on Tuesday, we'll talk about that a little bit. And maybe I'll just say this for whatever it's worth while I'm talking to administrators here. This is both as a pastor and as having worked in schools for years. Our best chance for solid discipleship and holiness in community going forward is the formation of small groups that have really genuine accountability within them, not just talk groups. It's a best chance, I think. So I encourage them, particularly in high schools, to help students to actually sit together and learn to talk to each other. Danger, I can tell you what the danger is. The danger is what James talks about. He says, well, if you're hearers of the word only and not doers, you'll deceive yourself. Okay. You have to watch this capacity to develop talkers. They know the rhetoric, and they know the language, and they know how to do the talk. But I want to know where is the deepness of earth
in the accountability that goes along. And I don't mean some kind of a checklist we go down through. But this sense, I sat together and I confessed my sin to Jeremy. I confessed it yesterday. My wrath got out of control and I kicked the cow or whatever. Tomorrow, I remember that conversation. And the conversation means something. I actually begin to change because of the conversation. So I really have started to push in that direction to ask how can we actually create the kinds of internal group interaction that lets that vulnerable person talk and make commitments and keep them. There it is. If you can accomplish that, that's a big step. Now a little bit of negativity toward the community I grew up in, they had no clue how to do that. Okay. And listen, they knew how to do a lot of things well. They really did. That they didn't know. and today, pastoral care has gotten so big that if you're expecting your pastors to take care of all this stuff, do something different. They can't do it. There is no way in the world they can do this. And so schools might have a chance, particularly if you're operating a high school. I know if you're a first or second grade teacher, this is not nearly perhaps as pertinent. And yet it is in a way that they learn to communicate with people well and share what's in their hearts and act upon that. So, good. Go on. Is there others you want to touch on here?
Quick question to flesh that out more in high school. You're saying these would be small groups of guys without a teacher that would just you would divide them up and say, hey, talk and pray, or
that's right, without the teacher, but with some training. And what I don't mean extensive. I just mean a little guidance. Here's what I'd like for you to think about, and here's what I'd like for you to. This morning we'll get together here, and here's a question for you, and maybe talk with a few of the more capable leaders and give them a chance.
So why without the teacher?
Well, I'm not saying the teacher couldn't be there.
Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be enough teachers.
Yeah, there wouldn't be enough teachers to do it in most schools. Well, I shouldn't say in most schools, but in the bigger schools for sure. Oh, no problem with the teacher being there. I don't think, although there are times in which particularly a 12th grader will do a little bit better if the teacher's not there, but it may be both, on and off. Some of the reading I've done on this, some of the better groups in churches are mixed. It's an older man, a younger man, a couple in between who are actually, yes?
I'm in an accountability group where we're ranging from ages about 38, 39 to 19.
There you go.
And that's really helpful.
There you go.
Because there's something you can be on the surface involved in a community, but until you have a heart level connection where not only you but other people are sharing the bottoms of their hearts, there's something that changes there.
There you go. Good range there. Well, think about it for your schools. My push here is not so much that you should make this a big time priority. It's just to say that students should get used to being actually here. We sit down and we talk about issue A, issue B. Some of the teachers here do really well at this, and those of you who've had me know that I don't do much of it, but I, as a pastor, I've begun to realize how powerful it actually is. So, just pass that on to you for what it's worth. You have more to say about that, Jeremy?
Yeah. In fact, this would be new enough for me that I'm not quite sure how, if I were administrating a high school, or a school, I'm not quite sure how I'd carry forward with it, but it's in my heart that this is a good thing that I think, as I said, I think in the larger movements of our communities, in the formation of community, part of me wants to recover some things that we've lost, like this family Sunday afternoon meetings that I'm getting together that I'm talking about, and part of me says, okay, boy, the world is, we're not agricultural communities anymore.
maybe to a certain extent, but boy, I tell you what, in a lot of communities that's changed dramatically, and believe me, that has dramatically changed our culture, way more than we think it has. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't view that as all negative. I view it as, okay, so what adjustments do we need to make to actually capture the essence, or the core essence and the core values that were integral parts of the communities that fed, at least the one that fed me well. Okay, that now I just long for how can we make this happen, or how can we help to create the forums where it will happen outside of the agricultural community.
You talk about creating spaces. I think of coffee shops.
Uh-huh.
And what Strickler.
Yeah, Glendon's doing over here.
You know, that couple little tables there with some coffee, and you know, I've said, you know, everybody's giftings are different, even as administrators.
Sure.
But I have done more ministry over a cup of coffee than I ever will do from behind a pulpit.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yep.
So if we can create some coffee shops, just take people out for coffee and one-on-one, and even in small groups.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Spaces created. Good. Thank you. Others?
Question that pushes back behind this discussion, so maybe we can save this, but is the goal to create a community, or does a shared goal create a community?
Uh-huh. Yeah, if I'm hearing your question right, do we focus on we're going to create community, or do we work on our shared core values and goals and let community arise out of that?
Like the Marines or the Harley Davidson riders, you know, do they sit around and think, well, how are we going to bond?
That's a good.
I'm just asking, you know, what we can sit around and think about how we're going to build this community, but what is it actually for?
Excellent question, and I would have a comment on that, because you're onto something there that I discovered again within my family. Shared goals that matter and cost, and I'm contributing to them, bind me to you. Now, I'll give you an example, and you'll know right where I'm headed with this one. So in Chambersburg, school salaries have never been so great, but I can promise you they're a little bit better today than what they were most of the time, than what they were back in 1970. Not bragging or complaining, just saying that's the way I think I'm right. Anyway, so I supplemented my school teacher salary by farming and did combining. So my oldest son, Ryan, he's in the combine in the summer. He's in the combine, but he's a young man. I can't believe I did this. The first year I was up here, he was a 15-year-old, and I sent him home to do 1,500 acres of corn and soybean. He ran the combine, and my mother took him to the combine, and you know, the all fall long he was doing that. And I'm like, what in the world is the matter with my head? What was I thinking? Ryan, when he crawled, he didn't know this, but he felt it internally. He couldn't have verbalized it. His work was integral to making the family economics work. Absolutely, that combine had to run. Okay. Not any bad reflection on Jordan, but go to the other end. I'm living here. I'm a little farther along, and I'll be really fair with you. My dad passed away. He wasn't a really, really wealthy man, but he gave us a little money, and I built myself a little barn up there with the money that he gave to us on my property. I have 60 acres up there. And you know what? I did that somewhat deliberately to create chores. I couldn't believe the difference that was there. So that was not integral to, I didn't have to do that. That was not a needed economic piece. In fact, it was easy. Jordan never said this now, mind you, so don't. It would have been very easy for him just to say, what in the world am I supporting Dad's hobby for? Do you see how different that feels? It's a little bit what I think you're getting at. And that is, well, if we just think we're going to, okay, build a barn and create the place where this can happen, well, if there's not this shared purpose and where it's blood, sweat, and tears that we're pouring into this to make this actually happen, I'm not sure if we're going to really get to that piece of community that I think we long for. So it's a point well made. And I don't know how in the world you do that as administrator in the school. but it's underscoring the point that I'm making, and that is that building community is hard work and takes a lot of thoughtfulness. It's also the reason just building a church. Now, I know the building of the church in Leon didn't all go so sweet, but a lot of times a project that all of a sudden is upon us. Well, a barn raising, maybe. Why is it that you suddenly can lay aside almost everything and jump in and swing the hammers and work together and work as a community for 4 or 5 days? Well, there is this need, pressing need, on you, and we got to stand shoulder to shoulder here to make this work. Somehow we lose that with what you call it, autonomy and independence. We kind of like that freedom of being, I can do whatever. And somehow or another, that sort of works against the sense of we're in this together and it's integral. We're linked to each other, and if the link falls apart, we're in trouble. Yeah, and I don't ask me how to just recreate all that. I don't know. I told you, I think I know the questions, but don't know the answers. But in schools, maybe that's the, I'll tell you a place where I've seen that actually work. On occasion, I would have, this would have been in Chambersburg when I knew the community really well, and the ins and outs and ups and downs and all of that. I had a case or so when I knew I was coming into a year with, I taught high school there too, and here's a student that is going to really be they're going to give me a run for the money. I had done this on occasion, actually called aside one of the older students, let's say, relatively stable, but maybe, and just said, you know what, I'm wondering if you could connect with Sam a bit. Would you mind, anyway? Maybe he's a ninth grader and Bill's a high schooler. If you could pull a student into they're helping you make this school work in whatever fashion. There gets to be buy-in that it's hard to create otherwise. So the stronger you can build that sense, even with the student body, we're in this together. The closer you'll get to what we're trying to push at here.
Student teaching.
Uh-huh.
Is key there too.
There you go.
And that's not optional in a high school.
You actually require it, right? There you go. Thank you for saying so. I hadn't thought of that one, but that's right. It does what we're talking about. Other ideas here?
I'm not sure I have an idea. I have more questions than ideas. But one of the negative things I've seen in the school setting where I am, I'm not quite sure how to handle it. I've talked to various people and we can come up with some ideas, I think, are helping, but I wonder sometimes if we could do more. Where when certain age brackets cross a threshold in their age, they're suddenly don't want anything to do with the younger student level. That was a really big thing when I stepped into our school. Like the high schoolers had this attitude about the little people in school. Of course, we have all of them in the same building.
Sure.
Some of their friends from bigger communities, they are just people their age, and they wish it could be that way. Well, hey, it's not that way. So we have to figure out how to break down that barrier between the age groups. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I'd be interested in hearing people's ideas on how we could do that better. But
you know what they do here to at least try to mitigate that? This is Gerald's approach. They form, what do they call those groups? You know, Josh?
Buddy groups?
It was after my time.
Oh, is it?
Chapel groups.
Chapel groups, I think that is the name.
But they also have a Big Brother, Big Sister program, I think.
Yeah.
older students are intentionally connecting with younger students.
What's that big brother, big sister? What do they do with that?
They have to ask for details. I think the older students are required to just take special time throughout the year to connect with them at some level. Maybe small gifts at Christmas, you know, sort of
birthdays. And
yeah, I'm not sure what all was implemented after my time.
You may be interested in talking to Errol about that, but they intentionally administrate some things to try to mitigate the problem you're talking about. So the chapel groups are just a high schooler and a middle schooler and an elementary, and there's a three or four or five of them, but a mixed group.
One thing I have done is when we do special events like field trips, special days, whatever, my high schoolers, I give them each a group of people, so they have four or so people that they are responsible for throughout
right.
the day.
Right.
And I try to pull something from each, so one student from each of the other rooms.
You've got the idea. No, just again, you understand that almost all of the things we're talking about here, you can't let dominate everything that you do at school, but there are structures you should put in place to help to mitigate that problem of going apart rather than coming together. Others. I'll take 2 minutes because we're to end here at 10:50. So the last one I have here is create culture, avoid knee-jerk reactions. Now the rest of my slides then have to do with creating culture, and I'm not even going to start on that. We've talked actually in many ways about it, okay? But I want you to notice the term create, okay? This is intentional. So creating culture, Sheila and I, somewhere in the early years of our married lives, we said to ourselves, I don't know if we use these terms or not, but we were talking, we said, you know what, what we're going to do living here in this conservative Anabaptist community in Chambersburg is we are going to quit reacting and begin creating. Okay. I'll tell you right now, the movers and the shakers are not the reactors. They're the creators. it turns out that we let too much shaking get done by the reactors and not enough done by the creators. So I've tried to put my energy in my 40 years of adulthood into saying, well, how can I contribute? How can I create culture? And I get carried away with this. I already told you I have this strong penchant for agriculture and farm and all that. So right now, I need to go home sometime today and weld up a rake so that Kyle can rake up some hay so that he can bale the hay. I actually am intentionally investing heavily in a community that cares a little bit about that level because I know there's something retained in that culture that's good. You didn't hear me say that that's what everybody should do. You just heard me say, you have to invest somewhere. Okay? And if you're an administrator in a school, you have a great opportunity to invest heavily at a particular place. And I would strongly encourage, I see some younger men here, look, if you've got years ahead of you, you can make a big difference in a community over time. If you expect it to happen in 1 year, forget it. but over time, if you invest heavily in certain areas and expect the Lord to create the reward, not you. Some of the things that I had imagined I might be able to do, I found out that I can't do. And that was probably a good thing to find that out. But what I do now, I don't know how to make the crop grow up to here and see the harvest. What I do know how to do is to intentionally put some seed in the ground, to actually sow, and then trust the Lord
for what's ahead of you. So, well, if you got 40 years ahead of you here in the classroom or whatever, take that opportunity and invest heavily. And remember, you can't invest everywhere, but invest heavily to actually create culture. Okay, we need to close here because it's 10:50. That's when I'm supposed to close. And one of the reforms that I want, that I'm working on, to try to add to culture is to be punctual, be on time, and do what you're supposed to do. So I'll stop right there. You're welcome to come back this afternoon. I just want to be really, really clear what that session is about. It might not be much different than what we're doing right here. Okay, you're just swapping ideas. I have a few things I can bounce off of you and maybe stimulate some of the thinking. We didn't even look at half the slides. But I can give you about a 15-minute blurb there and then just open it up for further discussion. So you're welcome to come back. If it doesn't suit you, I'm not offended. I understand. All right, I'll let you go for today. Thank you very much.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.